Senator Diaz, I'd like to thank you for calling in today. How are you feeling?
I'm doing well and hanging in here like everybody else, but it's a pleasure to be on your program.
I appreciate having you call back in. It's been great to talk to you. I know you get a lot of information that you can share with our listeners, and this it's been very calming to me when I hear from somebody who's in a position to know actual facts and to share that with us. But right now, I know that you want to talk a little bit about the fact that Florida has made some very wise decisions and now has $2 billion in reserve to finish the fiscal year, which is just until June 30th. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, so folks to understand at home, the way that we have to create our budgets, and we cannot run deficits, and we can only appropriate monies that have been projected by the Estimated Revenue Commission, which meets usually quarterly, but right now the presiding officers in the legislature have asked it to meet monthly.
Okay.
We did have an uptick in January and February with our revenues, so they came in above projections, which had us with about a $1.9 billion balance going into the end of the year here. Because January and February, before the virus spread to Florida, we had an uptick above projections. We're just a bit over $2 billion to allow us to finish the year. What does that mean for Florida?
Yeah.
It means that because we were fiscally responsible, we won't have to make any cuts in our current year budget. And so we won't be asking schools or hospitals or anybody else to make any cuts going into the end of the fiscal year, June 30th, and are able to finish the year without having to reach into any other kind of funding. What does that mean starting July 1 is we still don't know what starting July 1 means, other than the fact that because over the last 8 to 10 years, we've spent our money frugally, and we've been able to base our projections and our spending on the needs of the state, that we're in a much better position to kind of maintain status quo, at the very least with our budget, than other states. And when I say that, I'm not even including the fact that we're probably going to receive anywhere between $12 and $14 billion from the federal government. Part of that is stabilization. Part of that through the CARES Act goes to schools and other essential services. And so because of our good fiscal behavior, we are put our state in a situation where we weren't expecting this, but we were prepared to be able to handle this. And it's not great news, but under the circumstances, it's good news that we're able to sustain this without cutting essential services.
That's fantastic. I do have a question. Is it possible to project whether you'll spend all that money by June 30th, or will some of it carry over into the fiscal year that begins on July 1st?
So depending on the response to the real answer to that is depending on the response to COVID-19.
Right.
Because the fact that that would be the spending that we wouldn't have accounted for in our current budget. So in other words, we passed the budget last year that to get us through June 30th, and the adjustments to that budget are usually minimum budgets by department, agencies transferring money from one silo to another during the year. And that's done through the Legislative Budget Commission. But as far as additional spending, the only additional spending that we could foresee is the response to COVID-19.
Right.
And so if you do the math, we're right now in April. So you're talking about the rest of April, May, and June. I think we're in pretty good shape. There is obvious because of the federal money that's coming in, there's the possibility that some of that state money may roll over. And that just becomes part of our reserve, our general revenue reserve.
Right, which I think we're going to need because, you know, Florida is going to be taking a hit. You know, you're not collecting as much in taxes from because people aren't traveling here. Hotels are minimal or closed. Theme parks are closed. People aren't coming and going to restaurants as much. So all that money that we rely on from tourism dollars and everything else is not going to be able to generate so much for a few months here. And that, I think, will show in the budget and the projections that we had anticipated before anybody ever heard of COVID-19, right?
That's correct. And we to be clear, we did pass a budget this legislative session.
Right.
And that budget would take effect July 1.
Was it about $92.5 billion, I think, for the year?
Right. And now what we have to do is we're in the process of looking at what federal funds are going to become available through the CARES Act. And where our spending is, the governor has not acted on the budget, so I'm sure there's going to be some fiscal vetoes that would put money back into reserves.
Right.
And all of that combined would then allow us to make a decision in June if we have to come back. And first of all, we would have to appropriate the federal funds, because even though they come from the federal government, The only way that funds can go out to state agencies and local governments is through the state budget. So we would have to technically appropriate those funds, and then we would have to adjust the budget based on those revenue projections if needed that you mentioned. Anytime that Disney World is closed in the state of Florida, you know you're in a situation that is very serious when it comes to income and revenues. And so we are fortunate to have, again, made those decisions leading up to this that have put us in a very good position to respond to this crisis.
You talked about the money that's coming from the federal level. There was a story circulating locally. One of the newspapers, Tampa Bay Times, had commented on this. I think it might have been in the Sentinel as well, that cities with less than 500,000 people would not be getting money directly into the city coffers. Was that correct, or is it going to be going to the state and then Governor DeSantis and the legislature will decide how it gets disseminated out? I was a little unclear about that federal money and how it would get to cities.
Well, anytime you pass legislation this large,
right,
what's happening is we're getting guidance now. We're receiving guidance from the federal government on what exactly it means that we're receiving those funds.
Right.
And then through that guidance, the legislature will have to, when we appropriate the monies, just like we do with any other state funds, we would have to give proviso guidance language to that money, and that would dictate how the money is spent.
Okay.
I think that those stabilization funds monies would be distributed depending on need, and I think that obviously the federal government would prefer the state to distribute those funds, knowing the needs of the cities and counties inside the state instead of trying to do it from the federal level. So that's usually how that works.
Right, because down in like South Florida and those four counties that were the first that the governor put under a safer at home order before the whole state went, you know, there's a much greater need for money to combat COVID-19 than there is at, say, you know, Lake County, more in the central Florida area, and where the population is different, a little more spread out, and it's not spreading as much, and the cases are lower. So, yeah, rather than just going each county or each city gets this much, being able to disseminate as needed from a state level, I think, is the way to go on that one. And that was part of the concern, because it takes a while to understand when a bill of this size gets passed how it actually will go into effect. People were panicking, thinking that they weren't even going to get their stimulus checks, the $1,200 per adult and $500 per child, because they didn't. Because somebody took up one piece and then put false information on the internet, and you know how people do, and it's so, too easy to share misleading information in a Facebook post, which has probably been something you've had to combat quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, at the end of the day, we're facing this is a serious crisis, no doubt about it. But I think you have to look at it relative to the response. We live in the greatest country in the world, without a doubt. If you look at the response in Florida and across the country, our federal government has been able to turn around, regardless of the roadblocks that happen politically, turn around a bill with $2 trillion in spending currently, money and guidance coming down to the states. We're going to get money in the hands of every individual that is eligible. We have the SBA process and the lenders getting money into the hands of small businesses to keep them afloat, keep those employees. I mean, the speed by which all these things have been turned around, if you sit back and look at it, it's impressive. And I know that people are concerned and you know, always worry, but you really have to look at it for what it is. And that's that this country has really, this country, the state, have really turned around and gotten these responses into the queue. And hopefully these checks will be in people's bank accounts. The monies will be in the small businesses' hands so they can keep their employees. And if these businesses can stay afloat for the next 2 months, then when we get into the summer and we have the virus under control, they can continue to operate and hopefully not skip a beat. Because if you're able to keep your employees on the payroll and keep them together, then it's much easier to get cranking again than if you have everybody, you know, laid off or furloughed or released. So I think we have to look at that through that lens and understand that the response to this is an unprecedented event. We haven't seen like something like this in 100 years.
I actually may have a question about that for you, about how it affects small businesses, because there's, I think, a discrepancy, and it may be because of what's considered essential. For example, it was businesses with less than 500 employees, the whole small business budget that was set up, right? There are a company like ours, for example, has more than 500, but much less per market. Same thing for hotels. You look at Marriott, they've got too many, but they have less per hotel. And I think I was reading where, like, Marriott would be able to do it on a hotel basis so they can keep their employees employed and not furloughed or laid off. Was there something in the budget that for an essential service like a hotel that allowed them a little bit more flexibility, even though they're a larger company in whole and it's done by market or even by hotel, individual hotel? Or am I misunderstanding that?
Yeah, and I think the guidance on that is still out. But I would say is any business, you know, obviously the media business is essential, especially during this time. But yeah. I would say that any business that had any doubts, go ahead and apply based on those numbers that you're talking about. Because I think what's happening is the guidance hasn't fully reached down. And I don't know if with the speed they turned this around, they took those things into consideration. But I think in the implementation, they're able to make those adjustments and interpret that, for example, if it makes sense. So if you're saying that a particular station under a larger company only has 50 employees, that once that application goes in, they would be able to interpret that and get that money turned around to make sure that that keeps functioning. Because I think there would be a lot of common sense in the implementation of it. Sometimes when you rush these things, those details are left out, and then they're left up for interpretation. And sometimes during the regular course of business, we really sometimes we struggle with the way that agencies interpret things. But I think in this case, I think if common sense tells you that if you are broken up into smaller entities, that those entities should be treated individually. And that's how I would handle it.
That's what I would hope, too, because I know that it's a cumulative impact and it can be pretty severe. Now, the other thing I wanted to get to, because I know we only have a couple of minutes left, and since we happen to have you with us on the show today, and you happen to be the chairman of the Education Committee in the Senate. How about a quick update on schools? I know we've now extended it. It'll be at least May 1st. I expect you to probably extend it for the rest of the school year, that kids will not go back to physically go back to school. That's my guess, but that's just me. Where are you sitting at in the Senate on that idea?
Well, constant conversations with the commissioner's office and the DOE.
Right.
We're sitting evaluating these things by the CDC guidelines, which is every 10 days to 2 weeks. I think when you look at May 1st, realistically, you're probably talking both school districts in the state finish the school year by the beginning of June.
Right.
So you're talking about a month. I think if in smaller school districts, there could be a different response to this. If we come out of this before the end of this month, and then they can make the decision to kind of get that thing going again and get those kids back into school. But I think in larger school districts and more urban school districts, I think you're looking at cranking up the machine again and getting, remember, it's just not getting kids to school, getting buses moving, getting teachers back in these buildings, making sure that these buildings are prepared for the return of kids. So I think that as long as our distance learning virtual education is working, I think that it's probably a safe bet to assume that most districts will not, you know, go back to physical school this year.
Right.
Again, that's not a decision that has been finalized.
Right.
But just looking at the numbers, that makes a lot of sense, especially if, for example, like here in Miami-Dade County, our virtual distance learning, both in the district and our charter schools, just took off without a hitch. There's food distribution going on from 50 sites. And so we feel like this is running well.
Senator, I hate to end it here, but I do have about 5 seconds, so I just wanted to take a moment and thank you. This is Florida State Senator Manny Diaz Jr., who has been talking with us about the surplus budget.